Radio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder if even God can save our crazy world. For example, look what is going on in the turbulent situation between Israel and Gaza. Well, be of good cheer. Geraldo Rivera has arrived on the scene. Oh, happy days are here again. Geraldo always sees both sides, especially when these sides are laced with ratings. Remember the time he got Yasser Arafat to publicly call for peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians? Man, oh man, I almost fell out of my chair. Good old Geraldo charging in like Mighty Mouse to save the day. Arafat, the same man who led a group of cutthroats and rapists, the same charming fellow who called for the extermination of Israel, calls for peace at the instigation of well-intentioned Rivera in the Middle East, has been stable ever since. If only Geraldo had been the first to visit Auschwitz concentration camp, I'm sure he would have talked Heydrich Himmler into calling for peace between the Nazis and the Jews. The Jewish resistance at the Warsaw Ghetto would have been viewed as unnecessary, obsessive response to the German work camps. And if he'd been around during the Civil War, perhaps General Sherman could have been talked out of his march to the sea. After all, that was a rather disproportionate reaction to the issue of slavery, was it not? Geraldo might also have interviewed a few Minutemen during the Revolutionary War, challenging their tactics of hiding in the bushes and firing at the poor, unsuspecting British redcoats who were only trying to march in a proper straight line on their way to burn the next colonial town. Maybe Geraldo can transfer into the future and help Starfleet negotiate a deal with the Borg. Go get him, Geraldo! Now, I did try to warn all of you about this nonsense in the Middle East a couple of years ago when the terrorist organization Hamas organized a summer camp for kids. That's right, and they still have it, a summer camp for kids. Remember? Well, if you don't remember, let's take a trip down memory lane with our own Smiley Miley.
Hey, kids. Summer's coming to a rapid end, but it isn't too early to start thinking about next summer. Reserve your spot now and be where the action is. That's right. Hamas, the grandest growing group of Gaza, presents Summer Camp 2006. Swimming lessons, horseback riding, potato sack races, Jew hating, and other summertime fun. Our comfortable facilities help to make your stay a welcome one, while the patriotic green flags of Hamas in the background also make your stay a focused one. Camp songs include "In the Good Old Summertime," "Where Have All the Blasphemers Gone?" and "Other Religions Are for Sissies." Arts and crafts classes include painting, ceramics, basket weaving, matzo poisoning, and first-year bomb assembly. You may enter our camp as a boy, but you'll return as a man. You'll be challenged and stretched with teamwork and rigorous sporting activities. Shooting rapids, climbing trees, stalking infidels, and of course, beating last year's record for the fastest suicide. Some of our kids like to save that one for last.
Uncle Omar, when I grow up, will I learn to kill as many Zionists as you?
That's my boy. Study up, work hard. There's no telling what you might do.
Hamas Summer Camp. Having us next to Israel is the next best thing to no Israel at all.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm sure everybody has heard the news by now. Larry Flint, publisher of Hustler magazine, along with Joe Francis of Girls Gone Wild, is now asking the government for a bailout. Evidently, the porn industry is suffering as the rest of the economy is suffering. This is pretty serious news. The implications are enormous. Could some parents have figured out during these testy financial times that putting food on the table for their families is more important than the latest show from Bubbles or Peaches? Say what you want about Larry Flint. He is no dummy. So he must know that even our loony Democratic Congress will not grant his less than stellar proposal. They would be laughed out of office. The power to appease poor Larry is about as mighty as the man behind the curtain flying Dorothy back to Oz in a big balloon. Now, Mr. Flint has a reputation for sensationalism, and by merely making news, he probably figures that the porn industry gets enough attention to gain some new business. The news story itself acts as a kind of bailout. Now, Francis, on the other hand, is not as well known as Flint. Maybe he has such a contempt for our government and such awareness of how incredibly stupid this whole bailout thing has become that he figures it wouldn't hurt to just go ahead and ask. After all, one of the approving senators will be Al Franken. The request will be denied, but the mere attempt speaks volumes about where we are as a culture. Anyway, Francis is relatively new to the scene, but Flint has been around for what seems like a lifetime. So here's my suggestion. After Congress turns him down, let's all chip in and buy our buddy Larry a brand new pair of pants. That will work as a much better bailout, especially if he keeps them on once in a while. Returning to the more important news of the week, last week in Fort Lauderdale, not the Middle East, not Pakistan, last week in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at an anti-Israel rally, cries about nuking Israel were followed by a Muslim woman dressed in Muslim garb, and she shouted, "Go back to the ovens, Jews." Now, I probably don't need to tell you about how Nazi concentration camps disposed of Jewish bodies in ovens. It may also interest you to know that as the Allies approached, these same Nazis, in an attempt to quickly cover up their deeds, took live Jewish babies and burned them to death in ovens. And here we have the latest from the origin of peace. Go back to the ovens, Jews. Yeah, the religion of peace. I guess no more needs to be said, at least not to any thinking person with an actual conscience. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, 1-888-344-1170 is our toll-free number. That's 1-888-344-1170. We also take email comments and questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. And this first email is from Sherry. Sherry says, "Hi, Bob. I am thoroughly enjoying your blogs on your Israel trip. I got to go to Israel in 2006 by a church group, and it was wonderful. I have been reliving my own trip and feelings and experiences as I read your blogs. It was indeed a wonderful experience to walk where Jesus walked and to see with my own eyes where Jesus had been. These last 29 years that I have become a Christian, I have read the Bible, and I finally got to go to the land of the Bible. Well, thank you, Sherry, for the encouragement. I've been getting a lot of positive comments about my blogs. And if I have some time today, I'm going to read a few of my Israel blogs. I kept kind of a diary there with a free flow type of writing. A few weeks ago, I promised to read that. We never got to it. But what can I say? We get to what we get to. Here's another question by email. Doesn't it sound terrible when conservative bloggers and radio talk show hosts call Islam a violent religion? Isn't that insulting to billions of people around the world? And isn't it inflammatory to insinuate that terrorists are reading the Quran more accurately than moderate Muslims? How horrific to suggest that a sacred text actually commands Muslims to kill those who will not convert. Okay, I hear this all the time, and I sympathize. I really do. Yes, it certainly does sound terrible, inflammatory, and horrific when a popular religion is described with such electrically charged comments, except for the fact that this appraisal of Islam happens to be the truth. What can I actually say? Here's another question. This is also related to Islam. When you claim Islam is a violent religion, are you denying that peaceful Muslims exist? No, I'm not denying that at all. As a matter of fact, I personally have met and interacted with many peaceful Muslims, and they are wonderful people. However, and this is very important, such sincere individuals are either unaware of what the Quran truly says or making vain attempts to reinterpret its plain meaning. The terrorists take the Quran literally. So did its author, Muhammad. When Muhammad saw that his new religion was not going to spread peacefully, he received, by an amazing coincidence, new revelation from Allah. Verses such as Surah 9, "Believer, rise up and make war against the infidel around you." Now, an infidel is defined in the Quran as anyone who denies Allah or Allah's prophet. Continuing with our email questions, Bob, you wrote rigorously against Obama before he became elected. You even published a lengthy piece on why evangelicals who really understood the issues could not possibly reconcile a vote for Obama with true biblical Christianity. And yet, younger evangelicals in great numbers still voted for the man. What would Jesus have to say about them? Very good question. What would Jesus have to say for the many evangelicals who voted for Obama? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they have done. Well, let's forget about Obama for a moment, because I was able to forget about Obama by taking my trip to Israel. I actually got on the plane to Israel the day after the election. I was so depressed that I've got to tell you, the Israel trip helped. And I'm going to talk today about a place my tour guide took me. We were driving through the territory called Dan. Now, that was named for the specific area given to one of the 12 tribes of Israel. There's a southern area of Dan and a northern area of Dan. We were in the southern area, and this is where Samson defended his people from their coastal enemy, the Philistines. Now, I grew up loving comic books, I got to tell you. Not those stupid Archie cartoons, but rather the DC brand with its legendary mercenaries. This makes Samson an intriguing Bible character because he, too, was a kind of superhero, one who actually lived. True, the only power he shared with Superman was super strength, but there were other similarities. In Superman 2, Clark Kent also cashes in his powers for the love of a woman, though Lois Lane certainly had far more integrity than Delilah. Well, back to Samson. To be sure, this is one of the Bible stories most frequently accused of being a made-up fable, since Samson was not transported from Krypton as a baby aboard a rocket ship. How on earth could he single-handedly defeat armies of men or push in the pillars of a building when the Philistines tried to humiliate him through a public spectacle, the first show in history where the performer literally brought the house down? Actually, many accounts of extraordinary strength have been reported over the years, such as a mother lifting up the end of a car to save the life of her child who's being crushed. You've heard of those stories. Human adrenaline is offered as a large part of the explanation. Now, I don't point this out to downplay miracles. In other shows, I have described a miracle as something God does that we merely do not understand. There is a scientific explanation, but we do not yet know what the explanation is. And so adrenaline need not rule out God as the source of Samson's might. The Bible tells us Samson's strength came from the Spirit of God. The Spirit would have known where and how to release Samson's adrenaline. Or the Spirit may have provided the strength in some other manner, since science cannot currently catalog it, a matter that is scientific, but science just does not know of it yet. Deuteronomy 29:29 says, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law." You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, and we are going to go to the phone lines in just a couple of minutes. Let me continue first with Samson. But doesn't the book of Judges, you're wondering, tell us Samson's strength came from his long hair? Well, yes and no. Samson had taken what was called a Nazirite vow. Nazirites were men dedicated from birth to the special service of God. As a sign of their pledge, they did not cut their hair. When Samson allowed his hair to be cut, he was disobeying his Nazirite vow. The long hair was not an end in itself. Instead, it represented Samson's dedication to God. The power was withdrawn by the Lord as a result of careless rebellion, not because of a haircut. There are many gifts, ministries, and abilities made possible by the Spirit of God, aside from extraordinary strength. God also withdrew his spirit from King Saul in the scriptures. Although Saul could not do the mighty feats of Samson, his failure was similar. Saul had disobeyed. So no, Samson is not the story of magic hair follicles. It's the story of a man who had stopped walking with God due to the influence of a woman who represented contradictory beliefs and idol worship. Let me read to you a portion of the story of Samson, and I'm reading from Judges 16:6-22 from the New International Version. So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not..." No, thongs were different in those days than the kind of thongs we have today, just so you know. "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied." I think she also said, "Otherwise it's the couch tonight," but that's my own paraphrase. Anyway, verse 11, he said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then, with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "Until now you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with the pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such, this is the exact words from the scriptures, it says, with such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazirite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep in her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. See, things were going on in Gaza even 3,000 years ago. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in the prison. Now, as you can tell, this story is not merely about disobedience. Delilah has proven herself untrustworthy, and yet Samson keeps falling for it. I like Samson, and I admire him in many ways, but, oh, how shall I put this? Had they given out report cards in those days, I doubt that he would have disappointed his friends by raising the bell curve. Okay, time to leave the world of comic books and instead examine a comic strip, one of the most beloved of all times, Peanuts. Remember the one where Lucy used to hold the football for Charlie Brown? Here, Charlie Brown, I'll hold the football for you. Run up and kick it. After Charlie Brown runs toward the ball and lifts his foot in the air, Lucy quickly yanks the football out of the way. Charlie Brown lands flat on his back. This was not a one-time piece from Charles Schulz. It was as repetitious as Linus' blanket, as repetitious as Schroeder's piano. Again and again, sometimes once a year, sometimes more frequently, Lucy offers to hold the football for Charlie Brown. And Charlie Brown says, "You must think I'm pretty stupid if you're planning that old trick again." And then Lucy looks at him with those sincere, adorable eyes and answers, "But I've changed, Charlie Brown. Don't you have any faith in the betterment of human nature?" So Charlie Brown tries it again. As always, Lucy swipes the football out of the way, and Charlie Brown lands on his back for the 500th time. Now, I'm thinking of this story while the tour guide and I are driving through Dan, because Charlie Brown and Lucy remind me of Samson and Delilah. And since cartoons did not exist in biblical days, maybe God instead preserved a writing about the sad fate of Samson as a warning to his people Israel. Now, my brother Paul, who lives in Israel, certainly knows the story of Samson, but far more frequently, he brings up Lucy and her football as an analogy of Israel's dealings with the Arab world and Israel's dealings with the Western world. Think about it. Here, Jews, some wealthy Arab landlords have land for you to purchase. Of course, after you buy up, the land will be in dispute, but go ahead, take the land. Here, Jews, we, the British Empire, run the entire Middle East, and we have worked out, in accordance with the League of Nations, the Balfour Declaration. This means we are inviting Jews from all over the world to return to their native homeland, joining the Jews who are already living here. Here, Jews, it looks like we had to make a deal with the Arabs, too. You understand. So, actually, 75% of what we offered you has been given away and made into a new country called Jordan. But the remaining 25% is all yours. Knock yourselves out, kids. Here, Jews, boy, have we got a surprise for you. This is going to be one of those good news, bad news things. First, the bad news. The Arabs don't want you to have anything, not even the remaining 25%. They claim they should own all of it. And now the good news. We are not going to give them all of it. We are only going to give them half of it. So half of the remaining 25% of what we promised you is all yours. Oh, I guess we should tell you it's a checkered map with indefensible borders, but it's all yours. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. So Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our call in number 1-888-344-1170, and we'll get to the phones in just a minute. Before the break, I was comparing the story of Samson and Delilah to the story of Lucy and Charlie Brown. Here, Charlie Brown, I'll hold the football for you. You come running up to kick it. And I was talking about how my brother who lives in Israel always compares that to the saga of the Israelis and the Palestinians. And we went through the history of Israel. A lot of people don't realize that we've had a separate Palestinian state almost since the turn of the 20th century. It's called Jordan. 75% of what the League of Nations had promised Israel after Jews came from all over the world, many of them actually purchasing the land. And then the remaining 25%, the Arabs didn't want them to have either, so they partitioned the land. And we left off with the United Nations saying, the 25% is all yours, half of the 25%. We're going to give the other half to the Arabs. And, oh, we should tell you, it's a checkered map with indefensible borders. What happens next in history? Here, Jews, the Arabs rejected their half of Palestine. Instead, they are going to join their neighbors, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and others, to snuff the life out of you. However, the United Nations did just vote to partition the land, so it's all yours if you can defend it. Later in history, here, Jews, you won the 1948 War of Independence, but now there are displaced Arabs from Palestine, and most of the Arab countries will not take them in. Since you took in every Jew displaced from Arab countries, you should consider taking in Arab refugees, too. Years later, here, Jews, what a year for you, 1967. You have the admiration of the entire world, for in just 6 days, you defeated those neighbor countries who said once again that they wanted to wipe you out. But now the Palestinian refugees who were part of Jordan are your responsibility. We hope you treat them well. Here, Jews, good job giving the Sinai back to Egypt, even though you had to take it from her when she threatened to annihilate you back in 1967. Now you and Egypt are at peace. Never mind that she will sponsor terrorists who want to destroy you and say vile things about you in her newspapers. Congratulations for giving peace a chance and returning the Sinai. Here, Jews, now that you gave Yasser Arafat 90% of what he wanted in the Oslo Accords, please realize that was not enough. He wants more. Here, Jews, we know the Intifada is bad with Jewish children getting blown up on buses and all. If you make a deal with the Palestinians to turn over one occupied territory city at a time, peace can come to the Middle East at last. Here's the deal. You return land, they will promise to stop killing you. Sound fair? Here, Jews, the day after you made that peace deal, more suicide bombers attacked. That means your deal was not enough. You need to offer more. Oh, and make very sure you do not send soldiers after the terrorists. That will make us especially mad, and we'll have to stop with the Mr. Nice Guy stuff. Here, Jews, thanks for giving the Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians. In return, they are burning down all the synagogues in Gaza and will fire missiles into Israel every single day for 3.5 years. Here, Jews, thanks for turning over more towns to the Palestinians. Just one thing, we know you built that wall to keep out the suicide bombers, but such a wall really obstructs the peace process. Those walls should come down. People, and I'm speaking to all Americans and my evangelical Christian friends who voted for Obama, the Obama administration is talking about forcing Israel to return to the pre-1967 borders. Many liberals in Israel, desperate for peace, are ready and willing to make this deal. I spoke with some of them when I was in Israel, and I said to them, nothing you do will please the Palestinians. No matter what you give them, it will not be enough. When they mention occupied territory, they do not mean the West Bank. They do not mean the Golan Heights. They mean all of Israel. Nothing you do, no handshake, no peace agreement, no parcel of land will be enough until Israel is completely obliterated from the map. And they said to me, well, you may be right, but we need to try. You've already tried. Well, we need to try again. It's the only way to give peace a chance. Here, Charlie Brown, I'll hold the football for you. You come running up to kick it. Samson, if you really loved me, you'd tell me the secret of your strength and forget about the times when I helped the Philistines ambush you. 1-888-344-1170. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. And Stephen, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hello, Bob. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, my friend. How have you been?
Excellent. Thank you for letting me on to your show.
Wonderful. I hope you had a nice holiday.
I had, actually, I was playing Uncle Stephen, and I contracted the flu from the kids.
Oh, well, that ought to teach you from playing Uncle
Stephen.
Yeah,
you know, that old widows and orphans thing. They don't tell you those little kids are covered in germs.
Oh, anyway, boy. So, at least you have a little Christmas souvenir to last you a while.
It was wonderful. Anyways, I think what you've done is you've characterized it accurately. What we have here is a genocidal war. These people will not be happy until every last one of you has been exterminated. And that's
and they're not
they're
shy
about
saying that. They publicly admit that. It's the liberals who defend them that say that they want a two-state solution. But most of the wars that tried to annihilate Israel were taken even before Israel took the extra territory.
Now what we're talking about is Lucy and Charlie Brown.
That's
now
right.
Let's say that she holds the football out.
That's right.
Charlie Brown comes running up. Lucy gets ready to pull the football out. Charlie Brown stops, produces a revolver, and shoots her dead, takes the ball, and goes home.
Then the United Nations lists many sanctions against Charlie Brown.
Yeah. Well, my question is that, first of all, that's not funny. Second of all, nobody's going to hold the, even going to try to mess with Charlie Brown for quite a while. Lastly, Charlie Brown is, if you, you know, that's quite a reaction, but failure to recognize that somebody has targeted you for extermination is two things, basically. First of all, it's a denial of the obvious, and second of all, it's a sort of covert collaboration with the person that has you targeted for genocide. And unfortunately, since the Holocaust, the Jews are psychologically damaged goods. They're not capable of doing what they need to do to survive, because they picture themselves underneath that weird-shaped helmet with the Mauser. You see what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. And you know, the Jews were defeating the Arab nations time after time. And when we got into the reign of Yasser Arafat in the 60s, he and others figured out that the Arabs were simply not going to be able to win a real war.
No.
So they launched a campaign war instead. And boy, are they winning that campaign war. Did you know that Saudi Arabia actually funds professors to come over, teach at our universities, and rewrite our encyclopedias? Today's rewriting of history says that the Palestinians are this indigenous group of people that lived in that land for 4,000 years until the year 1948 when the Jews came and threw them out. I mean, it's abominable.
Utter lies.
Well, Adolf Hitler used to say, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a big one.
I have a quote for you in Latin.
Okay, hold on with it. Stephen, would you hold with us over the break?
Sure.
And I want to hear your quote. Okay, you're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, 1-888-344-1170. Nothing Israel does will appease the Palestinians, so they may as well just do what's right and fight.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, 1-888-344-1170, if you want to weigh in on this. And we continue with Stephen from North Park. Stephen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Bob. I'd like to rephrase what I said. When the Jews are emotionally damaged goods, because of the Holocaust, they are incapable of fighting a war of extermination, even if that war is necessary for their own existence.
Because they know that a war of extermination was fought against them. I understood that.
Yes,
and as a Jew, I did not take that as an insult.
And when Texas was first being settled, when the Mexicans brought in the Americans to first settle Texas, there was a tribe of Indians that lived in South Texas called the Karankawa. These people were extremely tall, like the Watusis or the people in East Africa, extremely tall, topping around 8 feet tall. And part of their culture was that they were cannibalistic. So they were huge and they were cannibalistic. And the early settlers to Texas realized that if any part of their culture survived, they were going to have to deal with gigantic cannibals for generation after generation after generation. So they reasoned that they were going to have to exterminate these people, and they exterminated them. And when they asked the rest of the Indians, the surrounding Indians, what they thought of it, the surrounding Indians said, "Are you sure they're gone?"
Now, the only thing I would add, of course, is I don't believe that the children would need to be exterminated, but I do believe that they would need to be taken and raised, because the Palestinian children are told from 5 years old on up to hate Jews, that Jews are vermin. And how can you make a peace deal with people that are going to grow up like that? I don't think I or the Jews or anybody could bring themselves to actually go and kill children. However, if you're sending off bombs to a city and doing like they did in Gaza, they've actually warned people to get out of the way of their own airstrikes. And if there is collateral damage, that's a different story. I saw a cartoon this week, Stephen. It was put out over the internet, and I need to forward it and send it out. It showed two baby carriages with a baby inside each, and the baby carriages were facing each other. And there was an Israeli soldier on one side and a Palestinian Hamas soldier on the other side. The Israeli soldier was in front of the baby carriage defending the baby with a rifle. The Palestinian soldier was behind their baby carriage so that the only way the Jews could get to him was to shoot through the baby carriage so that they could then turn public opinion against the Jews. Hamas goes out of its way to send missiles from hospitals, elementary schools, apartment houses, other housing projects. They want their own people to die because it's worth it to them to give Israel bad press.
Therefore, the back of this culture must be broken. This sort of moral equivalency
to
continue.
I totally agree.
You have to break the
back
of it. You must retrain the children. But the quote from Virgil is, "Qui facit per alium facit per se," which means that what a man does through another, he does himself. If he hires a man to murder you, he himself is attempting to murder you. Therefore, it's not only necessary to deal with the terrorists, you must deal with the people who hired the terrorists.
That's absolutely true.
As a proxy army. So I pray for Israel. I pray for the peace of Israel. But I mostly pray for the astounding victory of Israel over their enemies, so that not only that the terrorists get dealt with, but the people who pay the money to the murderers are dealt with just as severely. And at some point, yes, a champion will arise. Well, actually, a champion will descend.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And he will rule.
And there are a lot of Jews waiting for what they would call the first coming of the Messiah, what we would call the second coming of the Messiah.
Quickly, please, quickly.
Yeah, well, you know, Stephen, when I was there, I talked to so many people who, and of course, everybody in Israel, man or woman, with few exceptions, serves in the Israeli army. So even the leftists I talked to had fought for their country, and they're tired, and they want peace, and I can't blame them. But, you know, the Bush doctrine, or part of the Bush doctrine, was that we will make a war against terrorists and countries that harbor terrorists. And then what do? We tell Israel to deal with the Palestinians. We go, okay, well, you don't have to deal with Hamas, but you have to at least deal with the Palestinians. To me, it's one and the same. Having said that, I don't know if you heard, but Obama went on publicly the other day and said he is going to talk to Hamas. Now, that shouldn't surprise us since he said a long time ago that he had opened up talks with Ahmadinejad. Stephen, the first day I arrived in Israel, I mentioned over there, was the day after the election. You know what the headline was in the Jerusalem Post the next morning?
Give it to me.
Ahmadinejad publicly congratulates Obama, says he believes there will be change. You know, okay. When Obama promised change, I think it was just about one of the few things he was saying that was the truth. We are going to have change, all right. And folks, brace yourself for this change. Stephen, okay. My friend, it's always good to hear from you. I never asked you, and don't disclose what you don't want to, but where did you get your education? You certainly seem like a very educated person the times you've called the show.
Actually, what happened to me was shortly after high school, I began skipping around the planet. So I've lived and worked in about 11 different countries.
Well, that's a better education than a college education,
yeah,
to be sure.
Yeah, so I've actually eaten and lived in the same buildings as the terrorists. I know some of these people, and my prayers go towards Israel and peace of Jerusalem, but mostly the Jews are going to have to fight and fight, and there will be no peace until he shows up and makes them peace with that iron rod.
Absolutely true. We can't say it loud enough, and I wish you were teaching at our universities instead of the people who are. Stephen, my friend, it's always
good
to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
And get well soon. And now we have Barrett from Pacific Beach. Barrett, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi, I'm your friendly neighborhood Islamophobe and homophobe.
Yeah, well, I know. You know that in Canada it's against the law to speak against Islam or homosexuality, and yet if the Muslims took over a country, executing the homosexuals is one of the first things they would do. That's what they do in other Muslim countries. Not all of them, but many of them.
Well, the fascist ones, I wouldn't be defending them or complaining about it. But I wanted to comment on your book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I read it. It's to be as concise as possible before I start picking a few bones with you, I think that it clearly shows how those who are condemned when we stand in front of God will have no excuse.
Okay,
I mean,
Stephen. Can you hold that thought? We've got to go to a hard break. Hold with us, my friend, and we'll come right back to you. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, 1-888-344-1170. We'll return to hear Barrett's comments from my book. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We have Barrett on the line from Pacific Beach. Okay, Barrett, go ahead. Hello, Barrett.
Now, if I could. But on page 98, you talk about the sensitivity of the church. She needs to increase sensitivity to the gays and homosexual community so that to be understanding of their sin and not so condemning. And if we spent as much time on other sins, condemning them as we do condemning the homosexuals, that it would be more that we'd have more members coming out of the gay lifestyle. Well, true as that is, I would like to exchange the words on page 98 with child molester and Nazi, and put where you're saying we need to be more understanding of the child molester and the Nazis, because I do not see the gay lifestyle as any less wicked.
Well,
and
Let me tell you where I would come down on this. The reason I would see a difference, it's true that, I mean, on one hand, you could say sin is sin. But Nazism and child molesting is the kind of sin that's actually predatory. Consensual sex between two adults, the Bible would say that's wrong. The Bible would say that's perverted. The Bible would say that's a sin. But I would not put that in the same category as a child molester.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. But when they're taking your children away from you and forcing them to watch videos in elementary school, then you'll see how they're predatory.
Oh, well, I'm with you on this, Barrett. There's certainly a slippery slope. I mean, in some gay pride parades, the North American Man-Boy Lovers Association actually marches with the gays. And a lot of people don't know this, but in 1995, the American Psychiatric Association declassified pedophilia as an emotional disorder. Now, I think the fact that people are accepting one perverse action and that it could lead to another perverse action is something that we should take note of, because we are living in a society where the pedophiles are using all the same rhetoric. They're saying it's free love, it's beautiful. They're using all the tactics that the militant gay community use. Having said that, whereas I take great issue with the militant gay community leaders, an individual homosexual who may have homosexual tendencies and he may not understand how he got them, who is not a child molester, I would disagree with what he's doing. I would certainly call it a sin. I would not put him in the same place as a child molester. I would want to see the child molester put in prison.
But Bob, they're going to argue that your children should be taught about their lifestyle from toddlerhood.
I agree, and that's a major problem.
Which sears the conscience and causes the inability to discern right from wrong.
I agree.
That's child molesting.
I agree, and that's
child abuse.
Well, it is a kind of child abuse, and it's why we do need to wage a war with the militant gay community. I have found,
yes,
though, Barrett,
yes,
that the militant gay community does not speak for every homosexual. I've had homosexuals in my office as a pastor crying and pleading with God and wanting to be delivered from these impulses that they couldn't understand. I have great sympathy for them, but the militant in-your-face homosexual who wants to control what your child thinks, who wants to close down private schools and homeschools, I'm with you 100%. So where I've come down with this...
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure, sure, sure.
On page 151, Jephthah's daughter, the Bible doesn't say she was killed. In fact, she weeps that she would never marry. She didn't weep that she would die. And there are other areas in the priesthood where children were devoted and it was considered a sacrifice.
Okay, let's give our audience some context here. I was talking about a time where people made prayers to God and made vows to God that God didn't necessarily ask them to make. And there was a man in the Old Testament, difficult name to pronounce. I believe the pronunciation is Jephthah, but anyway, he said to God, if you will allow me to win this battle, and the first thing I see when I come home, I'll sacrifice, thinking it would be an animal sacrifice, and his daughter ran out. Now, it doesn't include the words, so then he took his daughter and killed her, but it's implied that that's what he did, because she did go out and weep, and the reason she said she was never going to marry is because she knew she was going to die. My point, though, was that was not something that was God's idea. I believe that if Jephthah had gone back to God and said, God, please deliver me from this ridiculously stupid vow I made that was my idea, I think God would have done it. And we have biblical precedent for that. That's why I mentioned in the book that when King Saul shot off his big mouth and says, anybody who eats anything before we win the battle will die, well, then his son Jonathan won the battle, but helped himself to some wild honey because he didn't hear what his father said. And then his father starts moaning and lamenting. Goes, oh, Jonathan, what have you done? Now we're going to have to kill you. And Jonathan just said, this is ridiculous,
well,
Dad.
Bob,
you're not going to kill me. And they didn't kill him.
I see it as an Old Testament Christophany for dying for God, even though we still live. Christians die every day, or we're supposed to. That's the way I see it. I don't think she was actually, had her throat cut on an altar.
Well, Barrett, I like your interpretation better. Unfortunately, yeah. when we just read the text without any preconceived ideas, it seems to me that
it's a Christophany. It's a representation of a spirit of a dying to self.
Well, it was very common. It was very common in those days neighbor nations of Israel to sacrifice people to their gods, and that's why God went out of his way to say, "Don't do this." But see, Jephthah could have still been influenced by these other religions, and of course, we know that God does not want human sacrifice. People always say, well, what about Jesus? But Jesus was God himself. That was God himself incarnate offering to be a sacrifice. That was not God picking some random human being and making them be a sacrifice. Yeah. So that was a culture that seemed to take human sacrifices very seriously. But my point is, if Jephthah did do this, if he did go ahead and kill his daughter, which I believe he did, it was not something God commanded him to do. So it still is not a proper indictment against the mercy and justice of God, because I think the lesson with Jephthah is don't shoot off your big mouth to God in a vow.
I'd like to call back in a couple of weeks about the Colossians 3:18 and the Ephesians about women subjected to their husbands.
Absolutely, my friend. Please call in anytime you want. And I know that I had a lot of controversial things in that book that not everybody will agree with, but thank you for reading it, and call in to discuss it with me at any time.
God bless.
Okay, Barrett, take care. Well, we're down to just a couple of minutes. I'll start reading from one of my Israel diaries. We'll just scratch the surface. A couple of comments that I have been getting about my blogs. And if you'd like to read the diary of my trip to Israel, you can go to my blog site, bobsiegel.townhall.com. Margaret in Northern California writes, "Bob, I am enjoying your diary entries so much." Patty, all the way in Italy, writes, "Beautiful blog, Bob. Wiping away the tears on this one, I am so happy for you to be here." Folks, I grew up Jewish, and I knew it would be an awesome experience going to Israel. I had no idea how awesome it got my Jewish and Christian blood together. And I'm writing this one while I'm in Israel. It says, "So peaceful here in Jerusalem. One finds serenity just walking through the neighborhood. All buildings are made with indigenous stone, nicknamed Jerusalem Stone. This gives the place a look of antiquity, even when you are not in the old city. A number of years ago, I read The Source by James Michener. In the pages of this utterly brilliant historical novel, a Jewish rabbi escaping persecution in Renaissance Italy manages to make his way to the Promised Land. Every morning, he runs through the town shouting with unrestrained joy and awakening his fellow Jews to the utter ecstasy of being allowed to live in the land chosen by God. I'm not one to go running and shouting in the morning. Come to think of it, I'm not one to wake up very early in the morning at all. But I do relate to this feeling of gratitude. I am thankful to be in a place countless others have merely dreamed about. There are modern satisfactions as well. Many coffee shops are open all night here. This is especially appealing to someone like me who has spent so many years writing in coffee shops, socializing in coffee shops, and informally debating in coffee shops. San Diego is filled with places like Starbucks and Panera Bread designed to be laptop-friendly, but such establishments close early, even on weekends. In Jerusalem, most of the coffee shops are open until wee hours of the morning, and many are open 24/7. When I want to pull an all-nighter in my American neck of the woods, the choice is usually Denny's or Denny's. I suspect that Denny's has stayed in business these many years precisely because they are open all night. I doubt that their food has much to do with it. Life in Jerusalem is calm, but with a peace that wraps itself gently around a growing sense of adventure and awe. How strange to turn on the news and realize that only an hour away, Hamas has been firing missiles into Israel every single day since I arrived. Perhaps with its own strange rhythm, this serves as typology for the other big news story, Iran's missile testing matched with ugly promises to wipe Israel off the earth. A map of Israel does not seem much bigger than Israel itself, and yet so many are threatened by her very existence, hell-bent upon her destruction. I'm not concerned. I know God called me to take this trip. He has always taken parental care of me. Ever since finding God in the early 1970s, I have felt a sense of personal destiny. God still has work for me to do, and I will be safe until He and He alone decides to take me home. It's not up to Hamas. It's not up to Ahmadinejad. It's up to God, but it's also up to you to join us next week.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.
Is your fence teetering on its side like the Leaning Tower?